ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're dads on the air.
And welcome to Dads on the Air for Tuesday, April 14th, 2009. With me, unfortunately, not in the studio, but via telephone from his home up the New South Wales North Coast, is the fantastic Peter Vandervoort. Are you there, Peter?
Good morning, Greg. You're doing a great job.
Thank you very much. Looks like it's Easter holidays and all the other dads are off looking after their kids today. So it's you and I sailing the ship.
Well, I'm looking after one of the children as well, so it's great to school holidays are always a good time for dads that do have the privilege of having contact with their kids, and it certainly feels good to have this regular contact where possible.
Absolutely. Look, yep, it's great that everyone's off, and we should say commiserations to John Stapleton, who has got a nasty toothache and is probably at home in bed nursing it and feeling sorry for himself today. So, John, hope you get better soon. Now, this week we've got a very interesting show. We're looking at gender-neutral approaches to domestic violence. I'm going to kick off the show with a couple of interviews from the Netherlands, with first of all with a guy called Joep Zander, and then with a woman called Patricia Goh. Now, Peter, I believe you conducted these interviews a couple of weeks ago. Would you want to give us a brief introduction to what they're about?
Yes, well, it's only something that's just starting to happen, is the recognition, of course, of that domestic violence against men also occurs in many households, but it's up to date, it's generally been accepted that it's only mothers that suffer and children that suffer from domestic abuse, but it also in many various type of cases, such as in homosexual relationships and other type of relationships, certainly the men often are also regarded as victims. So in the Netherlands, they're currently trialling a one-year program where they provide 40 beds for men who are also victims of domestic violence. So we speak with the director of that particular program, and also Joep Zander, of course, who's been on the program before, and he's a long-time activist and author and artist in Holland. So we pre-recorded these interviews a couple of weeks ago, so we hope that will be of interest to many people.
Fantastic. Really looking forward to hearing those. And finally, on today's show, we're chatting with a guy called Paddy Murray, who is the Buddhist chaplain from Goulburn Prison. He's done some very interesting development work in violence prevention in Campbelltown with both men and women. He actually ran the first violence prevention course for women out there, and sounds like really groundbreaking stuff. As far as I'm aware, there aren't any courses for women who have issues with anger and violence around there in their relationships, and so it'll be very interesting to talk to Mr. Murray later in the show. But first up, let's look at some news. First of all, an international story. This is from AAP. Australian father's kidnap rescue embarrasses Swedish authorities. This is a great story. A Melbourne father actually has been looking for his two kidnapped sons. Basically, the mother kidnapped the sons, took them to Sweden, and the entire Swedish police force was apparently looking for these kids for many months and couldn't find them, had no signs of them. And the father actually flew across to Sweden, parked outside the parents of his ex's, outside his ex's parents' house, on the hunch that they were harbouring the mother and the kids. And after a week of waiting, he found his kids, and he called the police, and he's now been reunited with his kids. So it's a very positive story, but you kind of wonder how hard the Swedish police were trying if they couldn't find his kids, and yet he found them after just a week. So that's a happy story. Now, Petey, you've got another what looks like a happy story, but you think there may be another side to it regarding family court case in Australia.
Yes, we briefly touched on that a couple of weeks ago, Greg. It was a case of where the two children who have been in the care of their mother since the parents separated in 2005, they've been sent from Hobart to live with their father in Melbourne. Because the mother refused to, refused to stop the children from exclaiming dislike of going with their father for visits, and she did nothing to stop them, it's a typical case of parental alienation, or certainly all the symptoms of that. So the judge, Justice Benjamin, changed custody from the mother to the father. And of course, many in the men's movement saw this as certainly a step in the right direction. The trouble is, as I tend to be a bit skeptical on things like that, because on closer examination, it shows that it was the same judge who 2 years ago convicted a mother, sentencing her and one of her eldest sons and son-in-law to suspend a jail sentence for failing to turn the children over to their father. This was around 18 months into the new shared parenting responsibility law. But as you can see from an article that was in the newspapers 4 months later, the sentences were overturned on appeal. It made headlines at the time, and the same judge has made headlines again. This single judge has made headlines twice now, simply because he is the only one making these sort of much-needed tough decisions on sentences. These sentences are rare because no other judge has the balls to make them, if you like. Or possibly worse still, they are small tokenisms by the family court in order to make the public think that shared parenting outcomes are something the family court supports. Let's face it, if they were that common, they wouldn't rate a mention in any paper, let alone a front page article. For anyone to go around claiming that things are changing for the better on the basis of the sentencing patterns of one single family court judge, I think we should just step back and just think about that a little, because it's not one judge doesn't make everything turn around. It has to be a general judiciary.
And you need to shift the whole entire culture of the court, not just exactly. Have one sort of lone renegade judge that's making these decisions.
As one other person wrote, citing one recent favourable non-binding case is not evidence enough of a judicial period on the enforcement of contact problems. He writes, I recall reading similar newspaper reports following the much-touted 1995 shared parenting responsibility amendments introduced by the Keating Labor government, that the enforcement of contact orders was still a matter of major concern 8 years later at the 2003 Hull Committee inquisition, kick-started by the Howard government, indicated no substantive transformation of a judicial reluctance to ensure compliance. And I still think that there's got to be a general judicial acceptance of the order and carry them out as they were intended to be carried out.
Mm. Okay, well, very interesting stuff there, Peter. Thanks for keeping us abreast of those breaking stories. We're going to end up the news section with a bit of a sad note here. This is from the Newcastle Herald. The title is Mind Death. Dad just wanted his family to be better off. This is a tragic story. It says, a father of three killed at a mine near Singleton was a devoted dad who was working in the mines to build a better life for his family, his wife said yesterday. Daniel Hill, 34, died while working underground at the Integra coal mine at Glenny's Creek early Saturday morning. It was the Hunter's fifth mining-related death in 7 months. Mr. Hill's wife, Melanie, said her husband had sold his restaurant to start work in the mines 3 years ago to give his family a more secure future. She said he was so proud of the boys. He was a great dad and a fantastic husband. The kids will miss him and I will miss him. We will always love him. So, once again, another father who's just doing the right thing for his family has tragically died in... one of the very dangerous industries that men work in. So, commiserations to Mr. Hill's surviving family. Now, one last thing before we go. This for our Australian listeners. this coming, this evening, the SBS Current Affairs program Insight is going to have a panel discussion about divorce, and the panelists are actually children of divorce. So that's at 7:30 p.m. Tonight on SBS. So that might be of interest to listeners to Dads on the Air. Peter, you have a great day, and we look very forward to listening very shortly to your interviews with Joop Zander and Patricia Goh.
Thanks, Greg. Good luck with the program.
Thanks. All the best.
Okay. Bye.
Your shadow walks faster than you. You don't really know what to do. Do you think that you're not alone? You really think that you're immune to it's gonna get the best of you. It's gonna lift you up and let you down. A ghost waiting his turn. Now I can see right through. It's a warning that nobody heard. It will teach you to love what you're afraid of. After it takes away all that you learn to love. But you don't always have to hold your head higher than your heart. You better hope you're not alone. 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 You better be hoping you're not so.
So fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child. Dad's in Distress. 1300 853 437.
We're back with Dad's on the Air.
You're listening to Dad's on the Air, coming to you live from 2GLF in Sydney. My name's Peter Van der Voorden. Today we're going to be discussing the issue of domestic violence shelters for men. Finally, there appears to have been some recognition that men can also be the victims of domestic violence. For instance, in the UK, a network of safe houses for male victims of domestic violence has been launched, with 100 places and 35 refuge houses for husband and partners of abusive women.
being provided by a mother and daughter team of property developers who wanted to use their houses to help the disadvantaged. This follows research that shows there is virtually no system of support for men who have been beaten by their partners. It was discovered that there is still a very strong stigma attached to men who say they've been the victims of domestic violence. Most of the referrals will only have decided to come forward after having been taken to hospital. In Australia, we recently saw a botched attempt by the New South Wales state government to provide shelter for abused male victims of domestic violence. The Domestic Violence Shelters for Women organisation was directed to also provide shelter for men suffering abuse at the hands of their partners. However, the domestic violence industry, which has long been accused of gender bias against men, flatly refused to cooperate and support men victims and then decided to hand their total funding of $720,000 back to the state government and leave both men and women without any support. Fortunately, there are more enlightened people around, and in other countries, things are slowly changing. In fact, in the Netherlands, they're now trialling several domestic violence shelters for men for a 12-month period. This project is supported by the Dutch government, who now provides a safe refuge in Amsterdam, Rotterdam, The Hague, and Utrecht for men who are victims of domestic violence, physical or mental abuse, and or exploitation by partners or other relatives. The Dutch Health Ministry refers to them as victims of violence-independent situations, and the Health Minister, Jed Busmaker, recently attended the official opening of the men's refuge in The Hague. We'll be speaking to the Managing Director of WENDI, which is the name given to the Corporation for the Men's Shelters in The Hague. But first off, we'll speak with a long-term Dutch Fathers' Rights activist, Joep Zander, to find out how this new project is seen by those that have been lobbying for shelters for abused men for a very long time. Joep Zander was on our program about 18 months ago to tell us all about conditions for separated fathers in the Netherlands. Joep Zander joins us today to tell us how these new shelters for abused men are seen by some sectors of the Dutch community. On the line now, we have Joep. Joep, welcome back to Dads on the Air, and thank you for joining us. I understand we've just interrupted your car trip. I just hope you have a hands-free mobile or you're pulled up somewhere.
Yeah, I have. That's okay. We're on a parking place now. Yeah, that's good.
Okay, so Joep, what can you tell us about the new domestic violence shelters for abused men, which are now being trialled in Holland?
Well, mainly, I don't think it's a change in policy somewhere that one discovers that men can be a victim of domestic violence too. So that's a step because till now it was not recognized, seldom recognized, and it helps to be recognized better. The other hand is that it's about nothing what is organized at this moment for men. They make a big story about it, but it's almost nothing. It's just a trial, and the trial is so badly organized that I talked to some men who tried to connect, and they had to search internet for an hour, and after they found the number, they got a lady, and that lady was an intaker and wouldn't connect him to someone who could get help with him. So it's very difficult. So it looks like something that even has some intention to fail. Well, that's perhaps too pessimistic, but you understand it's very badly organized at the moment. And the people in there, it looks like most are women. At least the people getting into the media are women. So the leading people there, it just looks like they use the methods of the women's help method and don't look at what men, especially men, need for kind of help, special needs of men in this subject. And it looks that most of it is not independent organized. You know, some criticism in the men's movement is that if we should have those shelters for men, it should be totally independent from the women's help organizations,
yes,
who are major and big, and try to catch this market. You know, it's a kind of market as well.
Yes.
And,
So sorry to interrupt you. Has there been much discussion amongst the Fathers' Rights group about these new shelters?
No, I can't say that. I had some contacts with people last day to find out what about are the opinions, and we sent around the things that are in the media, the articles, and it was on TV, it was on radio, and so it sent around. I didn't see a proper vision about it. You know, it's no one has written anything about it in the father movement.
Were any of the men's movement consulted on any of the domestic violence issues facing men today?
No, it doesn't look so. I think, uh-huh, well, the people, they didn't ask me anything, and I found some other key people in the Dutch men's movement, and they didn't know anything either. So I don't think anyone is asked something. Not really the important people. You know, the people who wrote things about the best domestic violence, like me and some other people, they are not asked about it. They are not consulted or something like that. And what I said before, it doesn't look like they are consulted, because they don't do it the right way, I think.
And considering the incidents of false abuse allegations of domestic violence have proven to be so destructive for fathers and their children, especially in the family justice system, do you see this as something of a major breakthrough, though?
No, not a major breakthrough. It's what I said. It looks like a bit of growing consciousness about that men are victims of domestic violence as well. So it could be, but it's already a longer thing. You know, the last years, it's step by step a little more attention for male victims. Although it nearly is about, often is about, Islamic people who have problems with how you call that, honor violence?
Ah, yes.
Honor revenge, you can call that,
yes,
that way in English. So they tend to look at special parts of the violence aspect, and not to look at the parts who have connections with missing your children or false allegations, which brings this problem, that false allegation against fathers. And then missing their children because of that false allegation. I merely think that they even are directed not to make that connection, you know?
It's interesting.
They make other, yeah.
It's interesting, though, because I've known a few men here that have claimed domestic violence against their wives and have actually ended up with the custody of their children. So potentially it has major repercussions, perhaps, for women negatively, if you might say, because it makes it a level playing field for men who can now also claim domestic violence and maybe take their children with them and separate them, which is not a good.
That's what you mean. You can fly with your children to a shelter as men.
Potentially, because that's
what you mean.
Yeah, potentially, because women have been doing that for a long time. You know.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I'm afraid it's you know, it's just starting. I have not. They're just testing at this moment. They're just opening,
yes.
So I can't say. I'm not really. I don't know really everything about it. I'm not consulted. I just have an idea from the outside. I have an idea because some fathers phoned to the shelters and didn't get a very good reaction. I'm not sure how it, if all, there are four shelters at this moment in the four main places in Holland. It can be, there can be a big difference between those four. I must say, I don't have tried them all. I don't have tested them all.
Right.
There are some people tested two of the shelters, and the ideas from that were quite bad, but we didn't test what happens when you want to go there with your children as a father, but I'm afraid from which I heard till now, I'm not so sure it will work. But you know, I don't know everything. It's just a test phase, and perhaps it develops. Well, sometimes it has some sense to be optimistic, so perhaps we look at that side as well.
Exactly. And you know, it may be a bit early yet, but has there been any response from the domestic violence industry, which surely must have some egg on its face? I mean, for many years now, they've actively promoted the notion that all men are perpetrators and all women are victims. You know, there's a whole industry built around domestic violence. And
For women. Yeah, they help for women. Yeah.
And that industry has promoted the notion that all men are perpetrators and all women are victims. So surely there's going to be some reactions from that industry, I would think.
Well, I didn't see them. No, I didn't see them.
Not yet.
No, not yet. I think that will come, because the big, you're quite early, you know, the openings are this week, I think, and I saw something about the opening, and I think the reactions get a bit later. But, you know, sorry if I did miss something, but
That's mostly okay.
I get the things about it, I see it, but I can miss something. I didn't see any counter reaction till now, but it may come, you know.
Do you see a 12-month trial as being long enough to assess the success or otherwise of the trial?
Oh, 12 months? Oh, no. Because all those trials started in October, and it's now it's the first moment that they got the public attention. They are not on the not good searchable on the internet. They have not very good searchable phone numbers. And so I don't think 12 months with this kind of not hurrying is enough to catch it very well.
So it hasn't received much attention in the mainstream media yet.
Yeah, it had some attention on radio, TV, and the papers.
Right. And how do you think men will respond to these shelters, seeing as men are by nature often far too proud to admit that they're being abused, especially by a woman?
Well, I think they won't get the right responses, because they don't get help from men. They don't get the things they want to have. And most help servants are not used to men, the help questions from men.
Yes, yes. So finally, do you think this project will be successful?
What I said, I think it's better to be optimistic and see it as a first step in consciousness, although there are a lot of remarks to make. But I think when the father movement picks it up as a chance to say what they have to say about it, perhaps it works. You know, we can make it work, perhaps.
Yes.
That's what we did till now, you know. We did this kind of consciousness reactions in the media, we react in the media, we say something about it, and that involves, you know?
Yes, yes. Yub Zander, thank you very much for filling us in, and we'll be speaking to other people involved with the shelter movement shortly, so we thank you very much for joining us, and wish you well on your car trip.
Yeah, thank you. I wish you well on your radio and on this issue. And I hope I hear it back somehow from you, Peter.
Absolutely, absolutely. We're going to go to a short break, and when we come back, we'll be talking about the domestic violence shelters in Holland. We'll speak with Patricia Goh from the Men's Shelter in The Hague. We'll be back.
As sure as the sun in the morning will rise, and the moon casting shadows will follow so wise, we won't stop loving a child that is lost till the end of our days, and no matter what cost. As sure as the shape of a circle is round, and four corners in every where can be found, we love our children, our own flesh and blood, despite our alienation,
which came like a flood, set them free, set them free. Let it rest, let it be. Give them their rights, so why can't you see? Set them free, set them free. Let it rest, let it be. Give them a voice like you and me. As sure as the rising tide will come in, and there's no one on earth who's without sin. As loving fathers for our children we pine, but our spirit's not broken, nor our will in decline. As sure as a peace will be followed by war, and some will be rich, some will be poor. We want to protect our children from harm, but we are prevented and try to stay calm. Set them free, set them free. Let it rest, let it be. Give them their rights, so why can't you see? Set them free, set them free. Let it rest, let it be. Give them a voice like you and me. As sure as in colors, black is not white, and food we must eat to stay healthy and sprite. We won't turn our back on our children we love, though some days it's hard and the going gets tough. As some will die young and others grow old, some tell their story while others withhold. As fathers we care and will never give up the love of our children, which some try to obstruct. Set them free, set them free. Let it rest, let it be. Give them their rights, so why can't you see? Set them free, set them free. Let it rest, let it be. Give them a voice like you and me. Set them free, set them free. Let it rest, let it be. Give them their rights, so why can't you see? Set them free, set them free. Let it rest, let it be. Give them a voice like...
We're back with Dads on the Air.
You are listening to Dads on the Air, coming to you live from 2GLF in Sydney. And don't forget, the program will be available on our website later today at www.dadsontheair.net. We're now joined by the Managing Director of Wendy, which is a corporation of the Men's Shelter in The Hague in the Netherlands, Patricia Goh. Patricia, welcome to Dads on the Air, and let me, on behalf of Australian men, congratulate your government for having the courage to open a number of shelters for men who are victims of domestic violence. Perhaps we could begin by asking you, what was the process that led your government to finally arrive at the decision that there was a need for these shelters, especially since for a long time now there's been such a worldwide denial that men could actually also be victims of domestic violence?
Yeah, that's quite right. It was quite a long process. There have been signals for quite a number of years. And I think there were some factors that have led to the decision of the government. First of all, a result of research that could not be denied anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a lot of there was attention in the Dutch press. There were initiatives from some groups, homosexual groups and other groups, and that meant that the government couldn't ignore it anymore. And besides that, our organization, the Wende Foundation, and others in Amsterdam, Rotterdam, and Utrecht, also insisted on some measures from the government.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I ask this because this also means that there's a cause for a major rethink on victim identification in the area of domestic violence, is there not?
Yes, that's quite right. Well, because it's used to the fact that most females are victims of domestic violence, and that male can be victim too. That is quite an well, it was quite upsetting for some people because it's not part of the male identity.
Yes.
But it happens, and it happens much more than we think. It can be war behind your front door.
Yes,
and,
yes.
We see in figures from the police that about 15 to 20% of the victims are male.
Right, right. Now your minister last year, Minister Busemaker, gave the refugees in the four main cities €800,000. That's about $1.6 million Australian dollars. Is this funding for the program? Is that extra, or is that and is that for the four shelters?
It's extra, and it's only for the four shelters. It's an experiment for 2 years.
Right.
And of course, it has to be evaluated. But I think if we have enough people that come to us, then we can say it's a success. But also, it's evidence again that this is a very serious problem. And I think that the government allows itself to. Refugee shelters after the experimental period, because we see that the first results are quite promising. All the shelters, 40 places in total, are full at the moment, and we also see that
is this
the men that arrive at our shelters are quite exhausted, and they're really serious in trouble.
Did you say? Sorry to interrupt you. Did you say there's 40 beds for men?
No, there's 40 beds in total in the four cities.
Oh, okay, and they're all full.
They're full now. Yes.
For men, oh, really?
Yes.
Wow. Do you know what the budget was for the domestic? What the budget is for the domestic violence shelters for women at all? Or?
Well, in total, there is about 3,000 places.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure about the budget in total, but 40 for men and 3,000 for women.
Right.
And we also know that there are not enough shelter for women.
Okay, right. It's a problem, isn't it?
It's a problem, yes.
Patricia, now you're the person in charge of the day-to-day operations of the shelter. Can you tell us a little bit about how they operate? So are they actually women's shelters?
There are women's shelters too, yes, but it is separate.
Oh, they're separate?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. It's a small-scale house somewhere in our region. We have taken a special safety precautions so that the men can feel themselves safe.
Yes.
They have their own apartments.
Right.
When they arrive, some of them have nothing, just their clothes and their passport. So we help them. We give them clothing, and of course, when they settle down, we start with our help. It can be very it can differentiate. It depends on what the need of the person is.
Yes.
Sometimes they have to. They want to express their feelings, they want to get help from getting a house or work. They can stay approximately 6 months, but if it is necessary, that they have to be at us for a longer period, but that is possible too.
How are the...
If there is any need for specialized care from psychiatrists, etc., then we help and mediate.
How are the men's shelters different from the women's shelters?
I think there is a different atmosphere. In your approach, you have to be more direct to men. They're not easy talkers. That's different.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's also a lot in common. And I think that the main thing that is in common is that we want to empower them. That is a very important term in our vision, empower the men.
Yes.
And that means that you have to take them very seriously, you have to accept Because they have, well, it's very difficult for men to ask for help.
Yes,
because
yes.
It's so, it's against what we think is the male identity. So
yes.
You have to accept them and empower them.
By nature, the man sees himself as the protector. Now he's looking for protection, which is it's a bit
yes.
of a blow to his ego, I would think.
Yes, that's correct.
Considering that these men are escaping from someone who is abusing them at home, are they also allowed to bring their children with them to allow them to escape the abusive situation
yes.
at home?
Yes, we have that possibility. It hasn't taken place so far, but there is a possibility, yes.
Including their female children?
Yes.
So if it happens, you have facilities there to cater for that.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Because it would be the punishment if they had to be separated.
Right.
And so it's one of our we have that facility.
Yes, Patricia, can you perhaps tell us what criteria you use to decide who qualifies for eligibility to be accepted into your men's shelter?
Yes, in our intake process, we want to hear the story of the person. We have to find out if there is if there is domestic violence by the partner,
mm-hmm.
or if there is an honor-related violence by the family, or that there is violence in a homosexual relation. We have difficulty if the person has severe psychiatric problems and if there is drug abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Then there is another problem, and we are not equipped because that needs specialized
sure.
care.
Sure, sure. In the women's shelters, I understand only female staff is used. Do you therefore only use male staff when dealing with men to perhaps better cater for men's problems?
No, I think we have changed our approach in the last few years. I think it's very healthy to see for both men and women
mm-hmm.
that it's the normal way of living. It should be the normal way of living. And we try to also have male staff in our women's shelters. There are not many, very many, but it's one of the things we want to reach. And in our centres for the male victims, we also have female staff.
Right, and men don't have a problem when they speak?
No, but I think that you have to be professional. You have to,
yes.
Both male and female, you have to understand it. You have to know what the problems are, and you have to be capable of communicating and relating to the person.
But do you have male staff then, professional male staff in your female shelters?
Yes.
Are you
very few, and we want to have more,
yes.
but we have them.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
So has it been difficult to find the appropriate staff to man the men's shelters as opposed to the women's shelters?
No. That was not difficult at all. But
oh.
I think also that we could use the energy, because it's a project, it's
mm-hmm.
an innovation, and we really wanted it. So we have advertised by the internet, etc., and it was very easy to get the applicants.
How are people referred to your shelters? By the police and medical professions and that
yes,
sort of thing?
That's right, both by the police and by medical professions. Some of them come by themselves. So we have brochures at several places. We have advertisements, and you can phone a number. We have also a website, because we understand, we've done some research and we understand that male are very used to using the internet. So there are some ways to approach us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what advice and support services are available to those entering the shelters? What support do you offer? In what way?
Psychological help,
mm-hmm.
help with structuring your daily rhythm. I think that basic help is to restore the feeling of safety, because it's really something that you don't feel safe at your own home. So that we have to restore the basic feeling of safety. We help them with housing, and if there are problems on the job, we can mediate.
Well, what about legal advice? Because obviously there could be legal ramifications down the track, especially if there's divorce or something in the future. That sort of has a part to play when somebody's been in the domestic. So do they get legal advice as well?
Yes, but that's not part of our organization. We have we work with some legal advisors.
We're speaking with Patricia Goh, who is the director of the Shelter for Men Victims of Domestic Violence in the Netherlands. And we'll be back after the break. Listening to Dad's on the Air, coming to you live from 2GLF in Sydney. And don't forget, The program will be available on our website later today at www.dadsontheair.net. We're speaking with Patricia Goh, who is the director of the Shelter for Men Victims of Domestic Violence in the Netherlands. Patricia, that reminds me, is it Wendy? Wendy, the service that you...
Wendy.
What does it actually stand for?
A turning point in your life.
Is
well, that... it's also, in German, it's Die Wende. After the fall of the Berlin Wall, there's also a turning point. And we want to help people at a turning point in their life, because some of the victims of domestic violence have been in that situation for years.
Yes.
And if they have finally have had the courage to pick up the phone and to say, help me, and help me with a planned flight from my situation,
yes,
then we want to be there and help them at the turning point of their life.
And Patricia, up until now, the police and therapists and others dealing with domestic violence issues have in the main taken the position that the man is always a danger to the woman if they're called out for domestic violence, and is therefore better removed from the scene. Accordingly, have any retraining programs been developed for police and other authorities to better identify who is the abuser and who is the victim when confronted by a domestic violence incident?
Yes, it's quite an issue, but this has actually taken place in the last few months. I think that's a change in the approach of it. It's not so easy to draw a line between who is the victim and who is the... who's the one who batters. Sometimes we see that both of them have their part in that. And we see also, and we hear from the police that they very often are caught in a situation of domestic violence. And you see that both men and male and female are fighting. And well, 15 to 20% of what the police recordings say, they see that there are only male victims. So there is a process going on that we rethink the dominant theme in what is victim and who is not.
In gender studies in universities have in the main concentrated on issues associated with the female gender. Do you think there is a need for these studies to be more of a gender neutral nature?
Yes, I think it would be that would be good, because I think that society has grown harder, I guess, and things aren't so aren't the way like it used to be, I feel that the domestic violence against male is a serious problem. It's top of it what we see, and I think it would be really good if research can support us in our thinking and evaluate all the actions that we take.
Yes. Patricia, we're almost out of time. Finally, from what you've seen so far, do you feel the need exists for permanent men's shelters?
Yes, I think so, yes. And it saddens me, but I think it's necessary. And I'm very proud of it that our organization is part of this new approach. And we hope that by the end of the year that the Dutch government... gives us permission to go on with our experiment on a
Yeah. Well, you say the 40 beds are already full, so that's only in a short period of time, isn't it? So obviously the need would appear to be there.
Yes. Well, the discussion would be who's going to pay it, because I also said earlier in this interview that we have 3,000 beds for
women,
female victims. And we see that these are beds are really necessary too, and there aren't enough for them either. And so the issue will be who's going to pay for it.
That's always the problem, isn't it?
Always the problem. Yeah. And then, of course, the economic recession is not such a favorable time, of course, on the new initiatives.
Exactly.
And at the same time, we see that there are from research hear that the factor that there is stress in the family situation because of the economic recession is an enabling factor for abuse. So that's a really saddening thing.
So checking on the 40 beds are 40 beds in over the total over the four. So that's an average of 10 beds per shelter. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. And 10 beds in each of the four cities.
Yes. I understand the fathers' groups have some concerns about how to contact the shelters. They found some difficulty, I understand, to find the phone number, and then when they finally were attended to, they had some difficulties then to get any further past the initial. Have you found anybody complaining about any of those things?
No, I'm not aware of it.
Oh, okay.
What kind of father groups you need?
I just heard that some people had rung the shelters and found that they had trouble finding them in the first place. Where do you advertise? Mm-hmm. Where do you actually promote them? And have you actually contacted any of the fathers' groups, for instance, who are often contacted?
Yes, we have. When we started, mm-hmm. we have had a PR campaign in a whole region, and we also. In the process of the preparation, we also contacted several groups.
Did you?
Homosexual groups and other male groups to help them, to help us with, making it as good as possible.
Yeah, what about fathers' rights or men's rights groups? Did you contact any of those? Or?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Of course, yes.
Yes, because they often get contacted first in the past because there was nowhere else to go.
Yes, that's quite right. And some of them, victims in the house also have come to us by that way.
Right, okay. Well, Mrs. Go, we thank you very much, Patricia Go. we thank you very much for being on Dads on the Air, and we hope that much good will come from this long overdue support for abused men. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
And that was Patricia Go. She's the director of the Shelter for Men Who Are Victims of Domestic Violence in the Netherlands, one of the first shelters in the world that are providing this service for men. As you heard, it's still a long way to go because there's only 40 beds supplied for men in the Netherlands versus 3,000 beds available for women. However, it's interesting to note that those figures given to us just then were the equivalent of $1.6 million Australian for 40 beds, and that would equate to $120 million Australian for the 3,000 beds being provided for women. And that's just in a small country of the Netherlands. However, it's a small step in the right direction. We'll be back after the break.
And We're back with Dad's on the Air.
Welcome back to Dad's on the Air. On the line now, we have with us Mr. Paddy Murray. Now, Paddy is a therapist. He provides assistance with relationships, emotional trauma, anger management, stress management, depression, post-traumatic stress disorder, and relaxation and meditation training. He's based in Bundanoon in the Southern Highlands of New South Wales. Welcome to Dad's on the Air, Paddy.
Hi, Greg. Just I'd like to add one little bit more. I'm
absolutely
a chaplain in Goulburn Prison.
That's right. Yes, we said that at the top of the show. You're briefly, what work do you do there as the chaplain at Goulburn Prison?
I visit there one day a week. It's on a voluntary basis. And basically, I run meditation and men's groups, basically Buddhist men's groups in prison.
Fantastic. Now, why don't we start going back in time? You're obviously trained as a counsellor, and I believe your training was started about 19 years ago when you did your graduate diploma in counselling at Canberra University.
Yep.
Are you able to tell us a bit about what the environment was like back then, especially around the issue of domestic violence, what the ideologies, what the thoughts were at the time?
Look, for me, I hadn't been in mainstream society for a while, so coming into sort of a university environment in Canberra was coming into very much the politically correct mainstream environment.
Right.
And the course itself had, I think, about four guys and 24 women, and that's very common in most counselling courses.
I think even today it's probably the case.
Yeah, and the general tone within the course, a lot of the women were very assertive around the stereotype that men were aggressive, and that often came up in the course continuously. And so that was the general environment. And when we did some specialist lectures on domestic violence, it was really a very strong us and them, you know, women victims, male perpetrators. And it was very, it was very uncomfortable being a male in that environment. You felt like a German just after the war,
and
accused of being responsible for killing 6 million Jews, you know, was
right.
Very heavy.
And did you or your fellow male classmates sort of have the courage to speak up at that time and sort of say, well, you know, this is a little uncomfortable with the way that you're sort of portraying masculinity?
Look, I was so shocked by it all and just had no skills around dealing with it.
Mm.
Funnily enough, I just felt abused as a male. And I felt like walking out, but I thought, no, that's a cop-out. But it's taken me years to acquire the, skills and understanding and courage to be able to speak that stuff, you know.
Mm.
I was at a recent White Ribbon Day talk locally, and I was being prepared to write stuff to help them in the media for men. And one of the women specialists came in and just started on a general anti-male rave. And I just said, look, excuse me, I'm here to help prevent violence. If this is not what this is about, maybe I'm in the wrong place, you know. I'm not here to discuss anti-male dialogue, you know.
Right. Now, obviously, as your experience there illustrates very well, there, even though times have changed somewhat, and certainly in certain areas of academia, there's been a bit of a shift, and there's been an acceptance that men can be victims of domestic violence, and some studies actually show that men and males and females perpetrate some forms of violence at similar rates. It's a controversial area, but things have moved on from that sort of 1970s, 80s perspective where it was there was only one sort of party line on violence, which is that we're in a male patriarchy and so men are violent and women are victims. Now, but there are still obviously many people who fear, who are sort of holding on to those old, long-held views. Do you think that some people are more passionate about holding on to these cherished ideologies about gender relations than they are about actually preventing violence?
Look, I think things have changed, but I think there are still a significant number in the bureaucracy who affect program delivery,
mm-hmm.
who are still hanging on to the fundamentalist cause, which has become synonymous for them with feminism. And so they're more interested in making that case all the time and running prevention programs that just point about men being violators and nasty people than actually looking at the research on you know, prevention. Like if we use the approach they use in our general medical system, we'd be held to international ridicule. You know, where we're in medicine now, you're looking at evidence-based preventative stuff, and we really haven't got to that stage at government level of looking at evidence-based prevention of violence.
So do you think the typical perpetrator programs that are run around Australia, most of them based, I believe, on variations of the Duluth model out of the States, do you think they are actually effective at reducing violence? Do you think that there's been analysis of these programs that has found whether or not they're actually effective?
Look, I'm not fully up with the latest research, but I think the general research that has been done shows that they're quite not very effective at all, and that sometimes they show that the men in them just learn not to be physically violent and to become psychologically violent, so that in fact sometimes the courses actually train them. So,
and of course there are no similar courses, or very few, available for women who may be wanting help with their with violence and abusive in their relationships.
No, look, there are very few. I mean, if they are, they're called by other names. There are some courses around anger for women, but they're never called, you know, about violence. But the women ask for it. I mean, there is a demand in the community by women saying, "Look, can I get some help?" You know.
And what about the issue of mutual violence? It seems to be almost completely absent from most of the literature and the government materials around domestic violence, yet a lot of surveys have found that the majority of relationships, actually both parties are violent, and then there are a fewer amounts where it's either the man or the woman who's the sole perpetrator. Do you think we need a new approach for almost some sort of couples counselling or working with both partners for those cases where the violence is mutual?
Look, I think it's fair to say that in a lot of relationships or families where violence is evident, that they are fairly dysfunctional families and dysfunctional relationships where both parties may have experienced abuse or violence and neglect in their childhoods.
Mm.
And
or poor modelling in their own families.
Yeah. And it's the family that needs help. And I think that has been very hard for government and delivery agents to actually do that, because the prevailing view has always been almost the male as a criminal and it being unsafe, but that's far from the truth. I think some recent work amongst female victims, they've one of their prior needs is to get help for their men because they're still in their relationships and they want to maintain their family. I don't think putting men and women in courses together first up is viable. I think
sure.
It's most important that the men and the women separately do some core skilling, and then when that has had some chance to get in and skill them, then to bring them together in a way to look at the application of those skills in their relationship.
We're talking with Paddy Murray, and we'll be back after this short track.
So fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child.
What do you care? It's not like you were ever there anyway.
Dads in Distress meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1-300-853-437 or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
And welcome back to Dads on the Air. We're chatting with Paddy Murray, who's the Buddhist chaplain at Goulburn Prison. Paddy, might just ask you a few little questions about the news we've just heard about the setting up of shelters for abused men in Holland. Now, one of the people we interviewed earlier in the show, Joep Zander, suggested that shelters for men, it might be better if they were operated independently from the existing women's shelter movement rather than being operated by the existing women's shelters, as in the case in Holland. Do you think there's any validity to that argument, or do you think that men's shelters can be worked, can be operated perfectly well from within the women's shelters paradigm?
Look, I think trying to provide for male victims in refuges set up for women is just a waste of time.
Why do you say that?
Well, look, the whole setup is geared around that whole gender thing in women and the whole issue of women's safety, and it attracts workers who have, you know, quite strong gender political views.
Mm.
And that's okay, and it's for women, and that's been very successful, and I'm not criticising them then for that, but because it is very gender-based, you know, there are some exceptions. I just think it's inappropriate to put a male in that environment. It's just the wrong setup for men. It's not geared for it. It's really geared to work well for women, and it's highly politicised.
Well, how do you think, very briefly, how do you think a male shelter system might function, and how would it function differently?
Look, there are a number of shelters being set up in Europe, not just Holland, and there is one in Australia, in Western Australia, and none of them are, they're male-based shelters, but none of them are specifically for victims as such. They include being available for victims. But therefore men, some of them perpetrators in difficult situations where they need to, they've got nowhere to live. Some might be men who are suicidal through serious trauma or marriage breakdown or child custody issues. And they're specialised centres for men. And the way they're run, they can cater for the variety of men's needs in that situation. And the one in Perth called Breathing Space is mainly, I think, for men involved in violence. But I think I've been doing men's work now for many years amongst Vietnam vets and homeless people and Indigenous people and people in prison and in communities, and men just know how to look after men a hell of a lot better. You know, we've had, you know, I've been running programs where there's been islanders and Maoris and Arabs and Indigenous people, and the men can come together and help. You know, I can see one of the issues for government is cost, because they already have a big network of women's refuges and it's already funded, so, you know, slot a few men in, it's going to be very cost effective.
Right, they don't need to set up whole new infrastructures.
No. I can see that that's extremely tempting, but I think it's really, because the need is not just for men victims, that the need is for displaced men around family misfunction.
Which I suspect is a lot of the women who go to women's shelters are coming from that broader definition as well, and end up in the shelters. I have colleagues who work in shelters, and a number of the women there aren't necessarily escaping abusive relationships but have other forms of family dysfunction, and of course they're welcome there and find a place there.
Well, exactly. I think the women's situation is just as complex as the men, and the women's refuge system is there to take women in distress who need refuge. And I think a men's setup would be the same, to just, like they trialled a program in Bega where they were getting rid of the man out of the house. The police would just kick him out. But there was no provision of what to do with the men.
Mm.
And they said, oh, you know, housing and blah, blah, blah. But then, you know, those places, once the men are stereotyped as violent, they won't house them either.
Right.
So we desperately need resources for men in the community. Like just the other day, I went to court in Campbelltown with a client, and the female involved, and it was a complex story, had three support workers with her. And I was there because the client asked me to, because he felt alone. And I was there, just there as a chaplain and counsellor, and it was a rare situation.
And I imagine many men in that situation wouldn't have any support. Now, look, unfortunately, we are running out of time. We've only got a couple more minutes.
Okay.
I did want you to briefly tell us a little bit about the violence prevention course that you ran for women in Campbelltown and how that worked.
Look, it was in response to the Attorney General saying, is anyone going to do anything for the 20% of perpetrators in Campbelltown who are women? That's the court statistics. And I got involved in creating that, and over a year we had about 16 women attend the program, and it was extremely successful. We went over the same material as we do for men, but of course the process in which the women worked was different, and we were very flexible around that. And a lot of the women had other, you know, complications of sexual abuse and child protection issues and dysfunctional families. And so it was just a very broad range of women who responded really well to being accepted and no shame and blame. And they had made a comment that a lot of the previous courses they had been to were just useless for them.
Now, unfortunately, I believe that course is no longer running. Is that the case?
As far as I know, yeah. The developmental work on these courses, effective courses for family violence prevention, is very poorly funded. And a lot of organisations really, I think, are a bit uncomfortable with running them too, because of the whole history of and stereotyping around violence issues, you know.
Mm. Now, we're really out of time. We've got about a minute left. Do you want to just give some final thoughts about, I guess, looking to the future, what do you see as important around is the issues for, I guess, both men and women who are dealing with the issue of violence prevention?
Look, I think it's very important that there be some conversations between men and women involved in this work at all levels, and that we start looking at family violence as a general issue and stop looking at it as a gendered issue, and look at evidence-based programs for reducing the amount of family violence we have in our communities.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Paddy. It's been a pleasure having you on the show. We'll be back next week.